So Krishna tells us, the whole universe originated from me. I am the root. This whole universe is the tree of creation, the tree of this world. And I am there in every action. Wise people see me. The ignorant ones think that they are acting. And I am the sun. I nourish the earth as the sun, as the moon. I nourish the herbs. I am the vitality in the earth, the ground. I nourish the plants. And the food that you eat, the plants, are nothing but me. That's why we chant before we eat. Brahmarpanam brahmahavihi brahmagnav brahmanahutam brahmaivatena gantavyam brahma karma samadhina. So what it means is that in the Havan Kund, in the ancient rituals, in the Havan Kund, there was the kund, there was the offering, there was the ghee, and the grains were put in there. And the Lord was invoked, whether it's for rain or for blessing the village or for whatever, the invocation. So here the eating is compared to the Havan Kund, where this body is the Havan Kund, and that is Brahman. And the digestive fire within, we digest the food, is also Brahman, the Lord. And the food that is being offered is Brahman. And who is being nourished? Brahman within. So that's why this verse we chant. So that's why when you eat, it's not just mechanically popping food in the mouth, but the Lord himself is entering. And so the eating is always, in all faiths, considered a very spiritual activity. That's why even in Christianity, they say grace. Oh Lord, you know, bless this food and we thank you and all that. So that is the attitude of eating. So Krishna says, I am the food that you eat. I am the propelling force that moves the food inside. I am the digestive power. I digest the food. I even excrete. Even your excretion is done by me. I am the circulatory system. I circulate all the nutrients in your body. I am also the intelligence, the memory, even the ability to give up old ideas and adopt new ideas. I am. Mata smritir jnanam apohanam cha. We studied that in great detail last week. So everything I am. So we think, okay, God is everything. Samadhya, I understood. He's the sun, the moon, the earth, the plants, the humans, animals, the body, everything is him. But he says, that is only the visible world. That is only what you can see. I am not just that. Don't limit me just to this visible world. Don't say I'm the murti in the temple, or I am the cross in the church. I am not. Those are all my expressions, but that is only what you can see. I am those. Yes, I am. I am the walls. I am space. I am air, fire, earth. But there is a lot more that you cannot see, you cannot perceive, you cannot even understand. So Krishna is trying to take us higher beyond just this visible world. So in the 16th chapter, last week we studied, in the 16th verse, he says there are two Purushas, Kshara and Akshara. You say, what two Purushas? I thought there was only one. You know, in the Purush Suktam it says Sahasra Shirsha Purushaha Sahasrak Sahasrapat Sabhumim Vishvato Vritva Atyatishthat Tashangulam. So he says there is one Purusha from whom came this whole universe, and he extends beyond that. Only one quarter of him became the universe, three quarters is beyond. So why are you saying there are two Purushas? So it seems like Gita is contradicting the Vedas. But Krishna says, no, let me explain. There are two Purushas, Kshara and Akshara. That is for us to understand. He is telling us by here, when he says Purusha, he does not mean the supreme Purusha. He means two entities, two beings. That is, one is Kshara and one is Akshara. Kshara means destructible, changing. That which appears to be changing, appears to be destroyed. And Akshara is that which sustains it. Like he says in this, Kutastho Kshara Uchyate. You know, he says, Dvavi Mau Purushau Loke. So there are Dvau Imau Purushau. There are two Purushas, these, where in this Loke, Kshara Chakshara Evacha. Kshara Sarvani Bhutani. All the beings that you see are क्षरा आर डिस्ट्रक्टिबल चेंजिंग एंड कूटस्थ अक्षरा उच्यते. अक्षर इज दी कूट, इट इज दी एनविल, इट इज द सपोर्ट. सो दैट विच इज कॉन्स्टेंटली प्रेजेंट इन माई वेकिंग ड्रीम डीप स्लीप, दैट विच इज प्रेजेंट इन माई बर्थ ओल्ड एज डेथ एंड सो ऑन, दैट स्पिरिट अक्षर इज ऑल्सो मी. सो वट ही सेइंग इज आई एम नॉट ओनली द डिस्ट्रक्टिबल बॉडी बट आई एम द स्पिरिट, द ओम, द कॉन्शियसनेस that is present in all your states, right from childhood to youth to middle age to old age. I am sustaining everything in this universe is sustained and supported by me as Akshara, as the Akshara being, as the indestructible element. So we say, okay, understood. Okay, I understand. Very clear now. Very clear. There is a destructible world and then there is a spirit, Bhagwan, who created, and he also says, I am also the creator, I am the creator, I am the sustainer, I am the destroyer. So I am Brahma, I am Vishnu, I am Mahesh, I am the Ishwara, I am there in all your states, everything. Okay, understood. So there is a world and God. He says, you have not understood anything, Buddhu. You have not understood anything, O fool. There is a third entity. He said, third entity. दो समझने में मुश्किल हो रही थी, अब तीसरा कहां से आ गया. He says, I had a trouble understanding two and now you are bringing a third one. Please don't confuse us. He says, no, no, I'm not confusing you. I'm telling you what is. Because we just limit our thinking to what I can see, hear, smell, taste and touch. And he says, this is nothing. This is a very small part of your world. And so turn your attention away from what you can see to what is sustaining it, what is supporting it, what is the substratum. So that's what he's taking us subtler and subtler. He's taking us deeper and deeper. He's taking us higher and higher. So it's that's why this chapter is the most beautiful chapter, because it talks about the Lord most clearly. None of the 18 chapters describes Bhagwan himself as in this chapter. He says this is, even Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda, it was his favorite chapter. Uttam Purush is only 20 verses, but everybody should memorize, at least everybody who is a regular member of Chinmaya Mission has memorized these verses. We are supposed to chant them when we go to camps. When you go to camps, then before lunch and before dinner, they ask us to chant these 20 verses. So everybody of us has memorized that. So it's a very, very beautiful chapter. Also, when you memorize, you should do it with understanding the meaning. And that's why Gurudev in his commentary, that you, most of you have, that green book, has given a very beautiful commentary about it. So now he says, what is the third Purusha? Let us study this third one. Kshara, Akshara, and the third one is called Uttam Purush, Paramatma, or Purushottam. So verse number 17. Uttam of Purushastvanyaha. परमात्मेत्युदाहृतः यो लोकत्रयमाविश्य बिभर्तव्यय ईश्वरः. बट इट सेज अन्य beside these Purkshara and Akshara, there is a Uttam Purush, the third one. Actually, all three are one, but for our understanding, he is separating it out so that it is becomes easier for us to understand. But in reality, there is only one. Uttam Purush is alone playing all these roles. He's playing the role of Kshara, Akshara, but still beyond those, and we'll study that today. So he says, Uttama Purusha Astu, but Anya, but there is Anya Uttama Purusha, that is beyond Akshara and Kshara, and it is called Paramatma. Paramatma, the greatest Atma. Atma is the consciousness or the soul that lives our body, and then there is a Paramatma. Actually, there is only one Paramatma playing all the role of all the Atmas, but in our understanding, we say, oh, her Atma and my. So we divide thus this Atma into different. So there is, but there is a Paramatma that is all pervading, even everything. So all the consciousness is that Paramatma iti udahrita. It is called, and yaha, this Paramatma, lokatraya, lokatrayam. So in three worlds, avishya in all the three worlds. Avishya means enters, pervades all the three worlds, and bibharti, and it supports. So it pervades and it sustains all the three worlds, and it is called Ishvara. It is also called the Lord. So now let us understand a little bit about what is this Uttam Purush. They say it is beyond Kshara and Akshara. Kshara is the destructible, Akshara is the indestructible word. In the 13th chapter, Gurudev Krishna had explained to us that there is Kshetra and Kshetragnya. Everybody can see this board, right? So Kshetragnya means the knower of the field, and Kshetra is the field. So the field is what we can see, hear, smell, taste, touch. And Kshetragnya is the consciousness, that through my consciousness I am able to see, hear, smell, taste, touch, everything. So the knower of the field is called the Kshetragnya. But suppose the Kshetragnya, the me, so who is Kshetragnya? Me, the knower, plus the field. But suppose the field is removed. There is no field. There is no body, mind, intellect. There is no air, space, fire, water, earth. The whole field is removed. Then what happens? Only thing remains is Jnya, knowledge, pure knowledge. While I am a Kshetragnya, while I am a knower of the field, I am a knower. I know her, I know him, I know mango, I know banana, I know camel. But in my deep meditation, where there is no camel, no banana, no humans, no nothing, even my body, mind, intellect go away, and I am not aware of them, then I become pure knowledge. Not knowledge of something. Our knowledge is always of something. I know English, I don't know Russian. So my knowledge is of English and my ignorance is of Russian. But when there is no English, no Russian in that deep silence, then nothing, then no thing exists. The knowledge alone, near alone exists. So there is knowledge, but not knowledge of anything. Not knowledge of a thing, but it is pure, unvarnished, uncontaminated knowledge. And that is the Uttam Purush, where in that state, when you have woken up to that state, when your mind is completely still and you have experienced that highest, then the world does not exist for you in that state. It does not mean that the world disappears, but A, the world does not exist. You have woken up to that higher state. But not only that, the whole world is nothing but that Uttam Purush. That is the vision of the wise person, where then there is no world, there is no differences. He sees the spirit everywhere. That alone is. So that is the vision of this wise person. And that's why it says this Uttam Purush pervades and sustains the three worlds. What are the three worlds? You know, there are many definitions of three worlds. One is waking, dream, and deep sleep. These are the three worlds I go through: waking, dream, and deep sleep. This consciousness, Om, or this Brahman, actually the Uttam Purush is even beyond Om. We'll talk about that. But at this moment, our understanding, Om is actually Akshara. Om is Akshara. Om is not that Uttam Purush. Om is what I'm aware of. Like I can chant Om, and then I understand Om is the consciousness that sustains my waking, dream, and deep sleep. But Uttam Purush says, I'm even beyond Om, because Om is again something you can chant, you can describe, you can understand, but I am beyond that. So anyway, so in the three states, waking, dream, and deep sleep, I, the consciousness, is there. I'm right now, you are awake. The consciousness is there. In a few minutes, some of you may fall asleep, but the consciousness will still be there. And then, of course, some of you will start dreaming about pizza, and then the consciousness will still be there. Might be me, I might fall asleep. So whether you are in waking, dreaming, or deep sleep, that consciousness is there. Also, three states also means the gross, subtle, and causal body. The gross body is this body. The mind and intellect is called the subtle body, and the vasanas are called the causal body. So the three bodies: the gross, the subtle, and the causal. The consciousness illumines all three. It is because of consciousness that at this moment my body is moving, I am able to see, my mind and intellect is able to think, and it is my vasanas or desires that brought me here. So all the three subtle, gross and causal bodies are pervaded and supported by the consciousness. Another way to look at three worlds is past, present and future. I was there in the past, I'm here in the present, I won't be in the future, but the Lord, the consciousness, Brahman, will be there. He was there before this, even time started, before this universe came. He was there, he is sustaining the universe now, and even when the universe ends, when the whole pralaya happens, the whole universe ends, the consciousness alone will remain. So it pervades and sustains the three worlds, and it is beyond them. That's why we say it is beyond Om, because Om is, as I said, it is the Akshara. It is the one that is there in all my states, but it is even beyond our understanding, even in beyond Om. And Gurudev in his commentary says it is like space. Like he gives the beautiful example, like there is the total space, you know, which extends not only here, but out to the furthest stars, trillions of miles, and even beyond all the stars, even where the stars end, space goes on and on and on. But the space appears to be conditioned. That's why we say, oh, there is a room space. Okay, there is a room space where we are sitting. And then we have a little cup here. So there is a cup space. So there is a cup space, there is a room space, and then there is the total space. Now suppose this cup breaks, you know, falls and breaks. So we say, oh, the cup space is gone. Now the cup space has become one with the room space. And then we break the walls of the room and we say, you know, we want to expand the mission. It's grown and, you know, we don't have enough space. So we need to make a new building. So we break the wall. So what happens? The wall breaks. The room space becomes one with the total space. So the total space, even though nothing has happened to the space, it's not that the space got broken and cut into the cup space and then into the room space and then into the total space. No, the space is one. It's not that that the space in the cup is different from the space in the pot, is different from the space in the hall. No, there is only one space, but we have conditioned it. Apparently, we have divided it. Appears to be conditioned, appears to be divided, but in reality, there is no division, there is no conditioning. It is one space alone that exists and that is apparently divided among the different things. So similarly, that one Uttam Purush apparently becomes Kshara and Akshara. Kshara the destructible, the perishing, and Akshara the imperishable, indestructible. And so one has to shift your attention to that which is beyond change and changeless. See, we say God is changeless, God is birthless, God is deathless. No, there's no birth, there is no death. In that total consciousness, there is no birth, there is no death, there is no change, he's not even changeless. Because the moment you say changeless, that means we understand, okay, changeless, I can understand with my intellect. Your intellect cannot comprehend that entity. The intellect fails. He says, then why are we here? Why are we talking? Why are we discussing? Because unfortunately, the intellect is the only equipment we have. It's a very sophisticated equipment. I'm not trying to minimize the intellect. The intellect is required to understand that. If you didn't have an intellect, these difficult concepts would be impossible to grasp. This concept is so difficult. Actually, I myself had to really struggle. I have been last 2 or 3 days reading repeatedly and trying to organize the thoughts, because it's not easy to understand it, because it's not cannot be explained in words. None of the scriptures can describe it. They all can indicate it. So whatever I am speaking is not mine. It is all from Gurudev's book and from Gurudev's commentary, his tapes. I listen to and I make notes. And then a little bit of my own examples or stories. But basically, I try just to be a mouthpiece, like a gramophone record, you know, where he has recorded and I'm just trying to reproduce it. So it becomes live, you know, so that it looks like there is somebody speaking, but it is actually Gurudev. And I'm eternally grateful to the Lord, to him and to the Lord for giving me this opportunity, and grateful to all of you, because I'm forced to study these. I have been forced to understand and to share with all. So it's just His grace. I every morning I wake up and thank the Lord for that. So it is beyond change and chainless. It is even not even birthless or deathless, because there is no birth in Bhagawan. Where is the birth? There is no birth. So how can there be death? So in that consciousness, there is no birth, there is no death. This world is appearing. The Lord Himself is playing all these parts, just as sometimes if you have seen, nowadays I don't see them, but in the past they used to have this one character who would stand on the stage and play 8 or 10 different roles. Even in the movies, there was a movie also, famous movie, one actor played 10 or, huh? Sanjeev Kumar played 10 or 12, 15 different roles. He alone was in the whole movie, and he was playing the role of the beggar and the king and the good and the bad and everything. And you had to, you know, figure out what's going on. So similarly, that Bhagawan, the Lord, the consciousness alone is playing all these roles. And the wise person sees, he says, it's my beloved Krishna is there in all, my beloved Jesus is there in all. But you and I, because of our ignorance, we divide the world into, I love this person, I hate this one, and this is my faith and my religion and my church and my state and my community and my, he speaks my language. All these differences we create out of ignorance, out of stupidity. So it says it is beyond change and chainless. The Lord alone is playing all these roles, but in fact, none of these roles are Him. It is just a play. So take this world like a play. Don't take it too seriously. Take this world as a big joke. Once you do that, then even the greatest sorrow cannot affect you. In the Gita, Sri Krishna says, Yasmin sthitona dukkhena gurunapi vichalyate. He says, the one who is has his mind stationed in me, whose heart is in me, gurunapi dukkhena, even the greatest sorrow cannot disturb, because he says the sorrow is just a game, it's just a joke. Okay, my foot is aching, it's just a joke. My back is aching, that's just the play of the body. The body one day will ache, one day will not. One day I'll be happy, one day I'll be unhappy. One day I'll be successful, one day I'll be a failure. This is all a game. And based on my karmas, I just have to go through it. But I am not these. I am Brahman. I am that consciousness. Nothing of this is real. It's just a game. So I'm here on this earth. Why am I here? To realize. Why am I here? To realize. That is the only reason I'm here. So that is the only purpose. They said, then why should we work? Because through work, you can exhaust your karmas. We are born with certain vasanas, we are born with certain desires, we are born with certain karmas, which we call as prarabdha karmas. So to exhaust those karmas, I have to work. But I have to work not selfishly, work unselfishly, work for the benefit of all. The more you work for the benefit of others, the more you exhaust your karmas, the more you exhaust your vasanas. And karma yoga activity done unselfishly does not create new vasanas. See, the reason we all took birth, because we have unfulfilled vasanas, we have unfulfilled desires, we have karmas that we need to exhaust. But if you work unselfishly, if you dedicate to the Lord, Ishwar Arpitam, Raman Maharishi ji says, Ishwar Arpitam Nechayakritam Chitta Shodakam Mukti Sadakam. So he says, Ishwar Arpitam, dedicate your activities to the Lord. Na Ichchayakritam, do activities that are unselfish. What do? Chitta Shodakam. They purify your mind. And a pure mind is very necessary for Mukti Sadakam, for liberation. Unless your mind is free of anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, selfishness, as long as that is there, your mind is full of dirt. A mind that is free of hatred, free of anger, just filled with love, compassion, kindness, that is called a pure mind. That is the mind of the saint. That is the mind of Jesus, of Buddha, of Shankaracharya, of Mirabai. So these great saints have shown us that it is possible to do that in a human birth. You cannot say, he did it, but I don't think I can. If Mirabai could do it, why can't she do it? Or why can't she do it? If she could dedicate her life to Krishna, why can't the rest of us? If Swami Chinmayananda was a journalist, he was working and he decided, I'm going to find the truth. If he could do it, that's encouragement for us. We all can do it. So the question is, what is our ideal? What is your goal? Is my goal only to accumulate more money or wealth and power, or is my goal higher? We find even in business, you know, somebody builds a factory. Now, one person builds a factory that, okay, in this community, there is a shortage of this particular product, or he has come up with a new idea, a new product that was not available. So he says, I'm going to produce this so that it will benefit the people because they need this, a new computer program, a new app for the phone or something that will benefit everybody. So he produces that and it sells, you know, millions of them sell. And then he makes millions also. But his goal was not that what can I get out of this product. It is that I make this product to help the world and the money automatically will come, obviously. And then when the money comes, he's thankful to the Lord, or thank you. And then he shares that with others. He helps others. And then he develops more products and he becomes more and more successful because the Lord has helped such a person. Another person makes a product. Why? Because it's not available. And so I'll be the only one. I'll have the monopoly and I'll market it and I'll charge as much as I can and I'll jack up the prices. That's what happened in Venezuela. If you have read the news, there were a few big businessmen, the drug companies and few big grocery store owners and all that. What they did was they just collected all the product in the country and just stored it. They hoarded it in warehouses. Then they wouldn't release it. And the prices went sky high. And then they marketed them. Then they you know, whatever they bought for $1, they sold for $10. So they made millions. And actually, the government has gone after them. Some of them have been put in jail. So the question is, what is my ideal? What is my goal? What is my purpose in life? You know, products that are made which are just harming people, like cigarettes, you know, alcohol. Alcohol, again, has no redeeming quality. It is just meant to intoxicate. Guns, you know, I'm living in the city of the Second Amendment. But guns is one of the most useless products. An ordinary homeowner, why do they need to keep guns? And they have machine guns and Uzis and all that. And then they fight. And now in Texas, they want the right to carry gun openly. They should be able to carry it. And they are actually, and not only that, but they said anybody who votes against it, we're going to kill them. It's there. It's on the internet. This guy openly said it. I forget his name now, but this one guy, and he has actually made a movement that anybody who opposes this is a target. So what does that mean? That everybody is carrying guns. It becomes like the Wild West, you know, in the 1700s and 1800s, where everybody was carrying a gun. And if I don't like you, I pick up the gun and shoot. And we are going backward instead of progressing. You know, we are regressing. We are becoming more barbaric, more uncivilized. And what is this world? And it's everywhere. You know, look at all the violence and in the name of religion, you know, so much of people are being slaughtered. And you know, who is the biggest culprit? The United States. We sell weapons to every country in the world. We sell weapons to Iran and Iraq. When they were fighting Iraq and Iran, what were they using? American weapons, both of them. And we made the profit of it. And the America, of course, the Russians and the British and the French sell it. But America is the number one salesman of guns in the world. The number one salesman of planes and weapons and tanks and grenades. Why? In the name of profit, so that our industry should make profit. The Boeings and the Lockheed and it's the same all over the world. The profit has become the number one motive. Money, money, money. That's all. Nobody cares about ideals. Nobody cares about love. Nobody cares about spiritual growth. I mean, there is a change, but the predominant motive at this moment is what is in it for me, I and myself, looking out for number one. And statistics and, you know, calculations and accounting, and that has become the number one. That we don't have time to think about, sit down and contemplate upon God and the Spirit and what is my goal in life, what is my purpose in life, why am I here? Talking about statistics reminds me of a little joke. I told that in the Thursday class, so some of you may get bored. But anyway, there was this big company of statistics. You know, statistics, when the corporations need projections and statistics, they go to these big companies. So they were going to hire a top executive. So they had all these ad running, and also 10 candidates were selected. And they said, so they were sitting in the line. So one was called, how much is 2 plus 2? She said, sir, 2 plus 2 is 4. Said, you can go. Really? Yeah, you can go. Second one, how much is 2 plus 2? 4. So as they came out, the people said, what did they ask? What did they ask? It was a very short interview, one line. He said, yeah, all they asked me is 2 plus 2. And I said, 4. And they said, get out. This doesn't make sense, you know. 2 plus 2 is 4. And why are they rejecting us, these people? So other one says, okay, let me change it. 2 plus 2 is 5. Said, get out. Other one says, 2 plus 2 is 3. You can leave too. I don't know, what do they want? And so all the 9 were rejected. So the 10th one goes. And so they asked him, how much is 2 plus 2? He says, sir, how much would you like it to be? And he got the job. That's what statistics is. That's how, you know, the whole world is on. All these accountants and whatever you, in India, they ask people, you know, how much, they don't say how much taxes you owe. They say, how much taxes do you want to pay this year? You know, it's all, everything is very crooked. Why? Because our attention is on the bottom line. So they say, turn your attention from the world to the spirit. Find out what is the substratum. The other thing about Brahman is that it's not an experience. You know, people say, you know, I sat down in meditation. And then what happened? He said, the blue light came. Yeah. And then Brahman appeared. Brahman? Yeah, Brahman appeared. And he said, son, what do you want? And I said, Brahman, I don't want anything. No, you need to ask for something. I am here to bless you. Okay, Brahman, make me an instrument of your love and may I spread love in the whole world. That's not Brahman. If you hear or see something in meditation, we are not discounting. It's good. If you see, the other day somebody was saying she sees blue light, that's good. That is a sign that you are progressing. Or if you hear some good, have some good experiences, or you even see visions of God and all, which is good. There's nothing wrong with that. But that is not Brahman. Because Brahman is not something that will come and go. If it came and went, even if it was an image of Krishna, it is still not Brahman. Because it appeared and it disappeared. Whatever appears and disappears is not Brahman. Brahman is that which was there, is there, will be there, constantly with me, constantly. And is my own nature. It is I alone. That is me. It is not an experience. People will say, you know, one day when I have studied a lot, when I have meditated a lot, when I have done a lot of penance, I'm sitting, you know, for hours and for years, then I will experience Brahman. No, you are experiencing Brahman right now. That is why you are awake. That is why you are alive. That is why you are talking. Even in your deep sleep, the only experience is Brahman. Only our problem is that our attention is out into the world, because through the body I perceive the objects, through the mind I feel the emotions, through the intellect I think the thoughts. So my attention is all the time out into the world of objects, emotions and thoughts. And I don't have time to turn inward. When you turn inward in your silence of your deep meditation, you will, the body, mind, intellect, awareness will go, the mind will become still, and you will become Brahman. You will experience that oneness with Brahman. Then the experiencer will disappear. It's not an experience. It is waking up. You already are Brahman, but we don't know that, and we need to wake up to that. The mind, when it is active, is called Kshara. The mind, when it is active, and I'm seeing the world, it is called Kshara. The mind that is still is called Akshara. Akshara. But when the mind disappears, when there is no mind, in that deep silence of meditation, in that samadhi, where the mind completely disappears, that state is Om, that state is Brahman, that state is consciousness. And as I said, it is actually even beyond Om. But Om is the closest we can get to. And I'll talk about that in the next verse. Om is the closest we can get to. And then beyond that, it is His job, His work, His grace that will take us. So here I'll pause for a minute. It's a difficult subject. So yes, go ahead.
If only it's separating knowledge from knowledge of?
Knowledge of is like, as I said, knowledge of English, ignorance of Russian. Right. But when there is pure knowledge, then there is no objects. It's objectless awareness. Because right now we only know objects, right? Right now my only knowledge is of objects. But suppose there were no objects, would I still be exist or would I be gone? Then that is called awareness. It's like Gurudev in his commentary gives a beautiful example. Say right now I can say I'm the son of my father, you know, and I am a doctor, I'm, you know, whatever my, you know, profession, I'm a father and a mother and father. Okay, so now suppose, you know, my father, you know, he's old, he's 90. Suppose he, I'm not, but suppose one day he will pass. So my father has passed and I've retired from my work. So I'm no longer a son. I'm no longer a doctor. But I still exist. I exist without any conditions. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a son. I am I. That's it. I alone without any attachment. So that objectless awareness. So when you wake up to that higher state, when the kshetra, the field disappears, when you waken up to that higher, because this world, they describe it like a dream. When you wake up to that higher state, there are three states, you know, deep sleep, dream, and waking. But there is a fourth state they describe in our scriptures, which is called Turiya state, the state of awareness. Once you wake up to that state, then the world disappears. Then there is no world. Actually, the world actually has no reality. It appears very real to us because we can see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. But once, actually, even the world has no reality, even in the physical plane. We say this table is real, this hand is real, but the physicists tell us it's just energy. We are actually made of molecules. Molecules are made of atoms. And what are atoms? Protons, neutrons, and electrons, energy. So actually, there is no solidity in the world. It is all pure energy. In fact, this whole universe is just energy. Everything is energy. The table is energy. So there is no reality, but we misinterpret and give substance to the table, give substance to the hand, give substance. So actually, it is pure energy appearing as all these. So the Brahman is that pure consciousness appearing as all these things. And when you wake up, then the objects disappear. Then there is no object to know. And it's knowledge without objects. Objectless awareness. I don't know if I have made it up. But for that wise person, there is when he wakes up to that state. Of course, functioning in the world, he will see, you know, people and... But when he's in that deep state of meditation, when he has woken up to that, then in that state, there are no objects. There is no world. Even the Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, nothing exists. Even the heavens, hell, nothing exists. That consciousness alone is. And that is the... Actually, the world was never created. That's a different subject. I don't have time to cover that. I had covered it about a few months back when we did the 14th chapter. This whole world is just an appearance, just a play, just a drama, just a dream. But actually there is nothing but that one objectless awareness alone. In that awareness, there are no objects. So that is knowledge, not knowledge of. It's not inert, it's not dead. Like when my father is no longer there, my job is no longer there. I am not dead. I am there, but I am no longer a son. I'm no longer a doctor. I don't have any of those upadhis, those conditionings. I am alone existing without conditioning. So that is called objectless awareness.
But when we go to real deep sleep, the soul is with us, the soul is gone.
The soul is with us. I'm alive. That's why my heart is moving. My blood pressure is maintained. My lungs are breathing. Even in deep sleep. No, the mind and intellect is still. The mind and intellect is still. The body up. So I am not aware of my body, mind and intellect, but I, the consciousness is still there. That's why I'm able to wake up in the morning. If the consciousness was not working, then I would die in my sleep. You know, people do die in their sleep, but their heart stops or not. So no, I am still there. That's why people remember, okay, I had a good sleep or I didn't have a good sleep. How do you know that? Oh, I had a very good deep sleep or I had a sleep which was very disturbed. Dreams and I kept waking up. So I am there.
To me, I guess that knowledge, even if it is inert, whatever sense, it's still knowledge of something.
No, it's no. That knowledge is not inert. That knowledge is consciousness. But in reality, this whole universe is nothing but that consciousness. So I can only be conscious of something else beside me, right? When I say I'm conscious of myself, that is consciousness. But when I'm conscious of this chair, this cup, this girl or this man, then I'm conscious of something else. But when I say I am conscious of myself, then that is consciousness. That is not consciousness of an object.
Right.
So in that total consciousness, there are no objects. These objects are just a creation of the mind. It's just a dream. It's just a play. It's just a natak. It's just that one character playing all these roles. Everything is that one consciousness alone. And in that one consciousness, there are no objects. So it's only conscious of itself. It's not conscious of anything because there are no other objects. So that is a state that cannot be described, can only be experienced, can only be woken up to. It cannot be intellectually understood. That's what all the scriptures say. Even all the Mahatma say, my words are unable to express that state, but I don't have a choice. I have to use human words. I have to use English and Hindi and Sanskrit. Why? Because that entity is beyond words. So all the scriptures, whether it's Gita or Ramayana or Mahabharata or the Bible or Quran, all are very poor descriptions of that state. But that is the best we have. I'm not saying that they are poor books. What I'm saying is the Mahatmas themselves say that what I am telling you is a very poor description of what that I have experienced. What I have experienced, I am unable to describe, but I'm trying my best. And in that state, there is no description. There is nothing. The body, mind, intellect, awareness ends. So there is no one to talk. I have not experienced it, so I'm just telling what Gurudev says, what he talks about. Actually, when you listen to Gurudev's commentaries and you hear him talking about the state of enlightenment, it is very clear that he's talking from his own experience. He's not describing. What I'm talking is in the books. It's not my experience, definitely not. But what Gurudev talks, or when you listen to these Mahatmas, you know that they're talking from their own personal experience. Gurudev nowhere he says that I'm enlightened or I'm realized. But when he talks about the state, you can tell it is his experience. It's not from a book. It's not what his guru told him, but what he himself has experienced. And that's the best I can do. I don't know anything more than that. Because again, I am a beginner in this field also. So sorry if I'm not able to explain.
Nothing against you.
Right.
For me.
Yeah. But this is the best I can do. Maybe when Swamiji comes or Vimalji comes next week, you can ask him. I think Vimalji is his knowledge is profound. You should ask him. He'll be here Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Ask him this knowledge off. I think it's a very good question. I did the best I could. I'm sure he'll do a better job than I did. Or when Swami Ishwaranandaji comes, definitely. But yeah, Vimalji is very, very evolved, very enlightened, very knowledgeable, very close to the truth. If not enlightened, he's very close. When you talk to him, you can tell that it's coming from depth. Mine is just, as I said, it's just I'm using Gurudev's words and just repeating them. But Vimalji's knowledge comes from within, and he is very, very close to the truth. He will answer it. But that it's a tough question. Thank you for make me think too. Maybe we'll ask him. Yeah. Anything else? Yes. I'll ask you a simple question. Was Jesus successful or unsuccessful? He was an absolute failure. From the worldly, he had no money. He was a beggar just wandering with a simple robe. Was Buddha successful? Buddha had a begging bowl. He didn't even have money to eat. He had to beg for food. And all he had was one orange cloth. Was he successful or unsuccessful? Guess your answer. Who is more successful? Is Buddha more successful? Or that guy who's living in the country club and is selling weapons to destroy the world? Who is more successful? See, our interpretation of success is very wrong. Who, that's the idea. Who is more successful? Who is the one we remember? Do you remember the guy, the king? You know, there might be some king who had conquered a lot of territory and killed a lot of people and became a big emperor. After he dies, do you remember him? No, there were so many kings who were born and died in India, in England. King William the 8th and 7th. And who remembers them? They just are names. We have so many. But one Buddha that came, even 10,000 years from now, people will remember Buddha, Jesus, Swami Chinmayananda. Swami Chinmayananda had nothing. He absolutely did not have a penny to his name. Guruji Swami Tejomayananda, who is the worldwide head of Chinmaya Mission. 300 centers respond to him. In his name, he does not even have a penny. He has no house. He lives even in India when he lives in one room. Just a room like this. One room with a little, that's what we have for our acharyas. One room and a view and a room where he can meet people. That's all he has. He has no home. He has no house. He has no money. He has no car. He owns nothing. The mission provides him a car to go around. Mission provides him health insurance. That's it. If you ask him, what does he have in his bank? Zero. So then in our mind, he's totally unsuccessful, right? Swami Tejomayananda is a failure. He has nothing. All he has is three pairs of clothes. He washes one and changes the one. That's all. That's the only thing. And he has a little, you know, little laptop and a little suitcase he carries. That's all. So who is more successful? The one, and that's what our interpretation of success is very wrong. We have misinterpreted success as the dollars, how many dollars you have, how many, whether you have six figures or seven figures or, you know, how many millions and billions. That's not success. You may accumulate them dishonestly, but at the end of that life, who is the one that will be happier? Who is the one that, you know, and that you have to look at that. Is what is making you happy. That is success.
So in this case, the Prince Siddhartha became a Buddha.
Yes.
Taking Bhiksha.
Right.
So who is the Prince of...
Absolutely. And see, if he had just stayed as a king, and stayed with his wife and child and then ruled over the kingdom and died after 30, 40 years, who would remember him? He was one out of thousands of kings. And Nepal has had thousands of kings. One of them was Buddha. Okay. Chala gaya. Siddharth, not Buddha. One of them was Siddharth. He came and left. But if when he became a Buddha, billions of people all over the world still go to Sarnath. Actually, we saw that when we went with Swamiji last year. We went to the place where he attained moksha, where he attained nirvana. And thousands of Buddhists still come every year. Why? Because that Buddha stayed here under this tree and meditated. That's true. Siddharth would have remained Siddharth and died as a prince, as a king. But as Buddha, he becomes immortal. That's what he says, Amritatva Ashnute. That's what Gita says, that one who realizes becomes immortal. Because he has realized that I am immortal.
I don't know, is there a continuation to that? That says, you know, but we can do that, even know that that's going to be
important. Well, not necessarily. We are not saying that you should give up your home and, you know, I mean, if you have that much vairagya, that much detachment, where you can, like Siddharth, give up his kingdom, wife and child and go. But you and I, we don't have that. So we are not saying that you become a beggar and just go around with a begging bowl and become homeless. You know, that's not the goal. What at our level, where we are, you know, we are householders, where we are grahastha, our purpose of life should be to work, to have enough for my family, for my children. But then if I have excess, I should share, I should help others. My job should be to sustain others, to help people who are in need, help the environment, help Mahatmas, help, you know, because that is the job of the grahastha, to support society. So be comfortable. We're not saying that you become a homeless and wander, you know what, because not everybody is capable of that. Not every one of us can become Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya left his mother. Now you'll say that was a horrible thing to do. His mother didn't want him to go, but he left. You know, there's the whole story about the crocodile and all. So, but if he hadn't left, we wouldn't have had all these great teachings. But not every one of us. So we, wherever the station you have been placed, work hard, do the best, work honestly, and then serve the world.
They will do anything for money. They will kill their own brothers and sisters. History proves that. You are here, even if you want to do it, you want to do it.
I'll try to finish the next verse. It is similar ideas, so maybe I'll shorten it and just spend most of the time on how to reach. That's a very, Gurudev has explained very well. The rest is kind of the same. We have already covered it. So I won't spend too much time on that. I've already talked about the world and dream and all that. So we'll just go into brief. Because it's the same idea in two verses. Krishna has emphasized it very strongly.